Hi.
Hello. I think we're live. It doesn't
Welcome.
Say live yet. We're live now.
We're live. Well, mine thing says live, and you can see me now, right?
I could see you before.
Well, remember last episode? I didn't know how to turn my camera on.
That is true. That is true. We're improving.
We have Alola.
Oh, there's Bola.
She's feisty tonight. She's like awake. Spicy. She's drinking water. That should be fun.
She just kind of ran. Welcome to the Changing Perspectives podcast, where it's just a complete and total some kind of show right now.
I can bleep you out if you want.
We can't swear. I don't know if Facebook likes the swearing. I don't know.
No.
I know you could bleep me out in the recording, but
yeah.
All right. So I am good.
Lola's here and bumping me. Okay. There we go, Lola.
All right.
She's feisty. I don't know what it is. She's like, she went to the toy bin and grabbed three different toys and ran to the couch and I don't know.
She's having a fun night. So for those of you that don't know, there's the Changing Perspectives podcast. We have three dogs and two cats. And so tonight, Josh has just one with him and I have the other two dogs. And we'll see how this will go.
There's a roaming cat behind me too.
Oh no, is it Pixie? Oh, it's Pixie. Mm-hmm. Oh no.
You see her?
I do see her. I see her little, she's like a shark. All right, but that is not what we're talking about.
Can I invite everybody to check out Changing Perspectives Online? Is that your website still?
It is.
Are we keeping you up?
I'm so sorry. It's really late. Wow.
I have my Changing Perspectives camping.
That's our old logo.
Mm-hmm. Mug. Mm-hmm. It is an old logo, but do we still have this logo available?
We do. It's like our origin story.
I'm drinking espresso out of this, which is one of my favorite things to drink, period. But I especially like drinking it out of this mug. And people are wondering, wow, it's late on a Wednesday, Josh. Why are you drinking espresso? I drink coffee 24/7.
Yeah. So do you know what's interesting? This is not what we're talking about tonight. If you're with us, if you're watching us,
you told me to vamp.
I know, but it was just for like 30 seconds. That's not what we're talking about tonight. We are talking about why, I don't really know how to conceptualize it in words, but essentially why we as a society have such a hard time changing traditions and doing things differently. Right. But before we get there, that point about the coffee is interesting because I always say, or I often say that I think you have undiagnosed ADD. And there's some research that suggests that folks that have ADD actually don't respond to caffeine in the same way. So,
interesting.
The fact that you can drink mountains of caffeine.
Because I definitely don't. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. If we right now sat down on a couch to watch TV, Josh would fall asleep because he's been up since like 4 a.m.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a long day. But anyway.
Okay. All right.
So we're talking about today, well, welcome to episode 102, everybody. But we are talking specifically about challenging tradition.
You said that so much better than I did. Thank
challenging
you.
Tradition, talking about, you know, are they outdated? Are they irrelevant? Questioning, why are we doing these things that we're doing? Is because we've always done them? You know, I mean, I didn't really prepare to talk about holidays, but that's kind of one of...
Oh, yeah.
The questions is like, why do we slave in the kitchen for 6 hours on a Thursday morning in November when we could really just like order out or get sushi so we can hang out together, right? Like, what's the point of these traditions? But anyway,
I was going to say Deborah is with us. Hi, Deborah.
Oh, hi, Deborah.
And hi to all of you who are listening on the actual replay and not on the live. You can catch us on the live. We don't have a schedule, just randomly.
Random.
If you follow my page, Changing Perspectives Random. With Jenny Brennan on Facebook, when we go live, you will get a notification of it. I don't know. Maybe we'll nail down eventually like an actual night or time. But for right now, it's just some night.
Hey, we literally are on the eve of football season. So who knows?
I know. And I've been nesting.
You have been nesting.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to get sidetracked. Okay. Which we already have. Mm-hmm. I have a quick question. I have a quick technical question. When I navigate away to look at another page, can you still see me?
Well, are you navigating away right now?
Now I am.
Yeah, except it kind of messes up your connection a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Like it just makes it a little slower. But if it becomes a problem, I'll let you know.
Okay. Well, I figured there was two topics that I thought we could dive into for questioning tradition and breaking tradition. One is parenting or child rearing. And the other one is, just because there's a lot of it, is weddings and wedding practices.
Could we also talk about, like, well, I guess that falls under child rearing.
What?
Like when a baby is born? Like a new member of the family, a new baby in the family.
Yeah, sure. Well, I think I'd like to dive into weddings first. Is that okay?
That's okay with me. I just said, hey, this is maybe what we want to talk about this thing, and then you do your stuff. So, yeah.
Does something come to mind right away that, by the way, I do have a handful of articles that I pulled for today's episode, and I can share those. I'm not as fancy as Jenny where I can share them in the chat. But
I can because you emailed them to me.
I emailed them to you, yes. So, can you think of some? I just want to ask you a question. Can you think of something that comes to mind that is totally outdated or something that we didn't do or that we did do that you wish we didn't do for our wedding, which was 1,000 years ago?
That was a lot of questions that you just stacked all together.
You know, what comes to mind about like traditions that shouldn't be there anymore? Or
I feel like this is a quiz. Am I supposed to get?
No, I'm just asking.
Well, so I feel like we were pretty untraditional for the times, but now if we were going to do it, we would be even less traditional.
I know.
But we did not get married in a church, even though we were raised in Catholic families, although neither of us would identify that way right now.
No.
And there were some folks from the older generations who were not happy about that. And I think that is still pretty true for folks that get married even today.
It's pretty
that
prevalent.
Maybe grew say, up yeah. within a particular faith that the older generations are like, wow, you have to get married in a church or else your marriage isn't, you know, blessed. I don't want to fall into a religious conversation.
No,
here.
We shouldn't.
Although I did see in your notes that you emailed me that you're sort of bordering on like a controversial episode.
What? The school stuff?
I think so. Now I forgot.
Because I added a third umbrella, which was like traditions in schools. Like,
it was that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we can, I would love to, but if we have time, we can dive into that. Okay. That might be a different episode, but.
So we didn't get married in a church. We did not do like a garter toss because that just to me, well, I think to both of us.
I have some information on that. Yeah.
Okay. We also did not, and no judgment for anybody that did do these things or is going to do these things. But for us.
You be you. That's the thing, right? Like.
And we decided when we were planning our wedding 55,000 years ago, we didn't want to do those things. We didn't want to smash cake in each other's faces. Because it just didn't feel right to us. And we did get some pushback from people about like, but why? You're supposed to do that. And I guess my question, that's sort of the point of tonight's episode is, but why?
Exactly.
Why are we supposed to do that? Maybe it's,
why is that a thing?
Right. And why does it need to still be a thing? And I think asking that question, why, is really important in everything we do, right? I just wrapped up, I teach a class on Wednesday nights. And you know, something, it's a class for clinical social workers talking about sort of therapeutic approaches. And one of the things that we always talk about is, why are we doing something? Why are we choosing in that particular place? Why are we choosing a particular modality? Why are we asking a particular question of a client? Why are we going down a certain road? There should always be a why. There should be an answer to the why. And I think it's really important and beneficial for folks to give themselves permission to say, well, why? Why are we doing these things this way? Wow, did you just see my whole desk shake?
What was that? A dog? Oh,
the two dogs have decided now would be a great time to wrestle.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, sometimes.
Listen, we're not going to get into the topic of you know, but this is the reason we do something is because we've always done it. Yeah, the reason. We're not going to talk about like that in the work setting, a professional setting, but I do want to mention, like, there's a couple articles and I've seen a lot of information about this online, is that one of the most dangerous things you can say in the professional setting is, because we've always done it, right?
Yeah.
So, but like, ask the question. So why do people smash cake? I have some information about that, and I would direct you to weddingbee.com. There's an article about the do's and don'ts of wedding cake smashing. And it's really unclear where the first cake smash happened or where it originated. And most folks don't understand why the tradition exists at all. But some historians, now I'm quoting the article now, some historians credit this tradition to ancient Rome, where newlywed grooms smashed barley cake on there. That's probably disgusting.
That sounds terrible.
I know. They smashed barley.
I just attempted to put the link in the chat. I don't know if it works or not.
Yeah, this was the weddingbee.com, like I said. But they smashed barley cakes on their bride's heads at the end of the wedding festivities. Why did they do this? Because it was the tradition.
Yeah, wait, can I guess? Go ahead. I guess I didn't. Yeah. I saw that you emailed
me. You have the answer in your email, but go ahead. But
I didn't click on any of the links. I just saw that, like, oh, Josh did a lot of research for this episode. Cool. And does it have something to do with fertility?
Yes. How did you guess that?
Well, because that's what weddings are supposed to be all about, right?
Yes, like, we're going to talk a lot about that. Like, becoming, why are the brides in white? And why am I asking permission? Like of the father, like you're, the bride is some sort of property. Like it's mind blowing. Yeah, anyway,
here we go. We could get political.
I know. But, so yeah, exactly. The tradition was said to encourage fertility, though many modern analyses claim it was primarily a show of male dominance over the young wife.
That would have been my second guess.
I know. Regardless, this is quote from, again, weddingbee.com. Wedding bee, like B-E-E, like bees, like I'm going to own bees next year. Anyway, regardless of intent, this tradition survived years of changing trends and sharing cultures, ending in the frosting-covered egalitarian cake smash of today. That's, again, from weddingbee.com. We did not smash cake, and that's one of the many things that you can find on...
Cake. Spent a lot of money on that cake,
which was delicious. Martha Stewart.com. She has an article there, outdated wedding traditions, and that's one of the things on there was smashing the cake. It's basically now done for silly photos and memorable moments, but it's results in frosting stained hair and smeared makeup and cake crumbles everywhere. And Martha Stewart says, skip this ritual altogether. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of asking the question, okay, do we really want to smash cake? Is that fun? Is it funny? You spend $500 to $1,000 to $2,000 on a cake. Do you really want to ruin some of it? I'm a cake fan. I would say no. But, you know, asking the question, does it really go back to fertility and showing that the male groom is... has dominance over the bride? It just seems backwards to me.
Yeah, I mean, does it really go back? Those are two different things, right? Does it really go back to it? Yes. Do we need to still have those roots? I would argue not if you don't want to. If you want to, cool, great, you do that. You invite me to your wedding, you're going to smash cake, I'm there for it, as long as it's what you want to do.
That's the changing perspectives caveat.
And you don't smash any on me.
Yeah, right. That's the changing perspective, excuse me, caveat. We don't want to yuck anybody's yum, right, Jenny?
That is not our caveat. Yeah. Say it that a different way.
You do you. We're not judging. Yeah. We're just sharing information about questioning the background of certain traditions. And it's okay to break tradition. Are they outdated? Are they inappropriate for the current society? Or are they appropriate for you? You can make your own decision. But I want to go back to... the whole notion of asking permission for someone's hand in marriage, whether or not that's the bride, groom, bride, whatever the situation is. What do you think about that, Jenny? That whole practice of asking permission.
I feel like you're shouting into the mic. It just got loud. What do I think about that? Well, you're asking very broad questions today. I think that it goes back to when women were property, which was not that very long ago. Maybe we're heading back that way. And, but I also understand how it I think over time has evolved to like a sign of respect. But I feel like it, as a therapist, feel like it muddies some boundary waters, potentially.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And it's is it about, so the, you know, is it about the joining of families or the joining of two people? And what is the marriage or the wedding mean to the two people who are getting married? Does it actually mean the joining of two families? And if that's the case, should you have some sort of ceremonial or, I don't know, activity where you're not asking permission, but involving the parents or the other, whatever, whoever is important to the person? To each his own, but the notion of asking permission to now, you know, even you can connect it to like the giving away of the bride too, right? Like, what do you mean you're mm-hmm. giving away? Were you owned by somebody else? You're giving me away?
Well, yes. Yeah. But yes, I mean, I think you're asking the question about like, where does this come from? I think a lot of these traditions, and right now we're just talking about weddings, but I think a lot of these traditions do have, there is an answer to the why. Where did this come from? It came from a place, right? Like it came from when women were property and when they were, you know, there was a dowry and women's families would pay men to marry that. Like these things really happened and they are the origins of tradition. I guess my question is, well, if that tradition doesn't feel right for you anymore, is it okay for you to say, we're not doing that? You like dialed in on the, I wasn't even really thinking about weddings specifically. Sort of, I was thinking about, I was thinking more so about like childbirth and sort of traditions in general. I lost my train of thought there, but.
Oh, I have some, you know, parenting articles and stuff like that too. But as I was doing some research for this episode, I was so fascinated by so many of these traditions that seem outdated for surrounding weddings.
Yeah, they are. Yes. Yeah, they do feel outdated. And we've got some folks in the chat box saying things like ask permission is creepy. The parts of it are barbaric. I feel like the taking off of the garter is equal parts icky and outdated.
That, the Martha Stewart article talks about that, and I'm going to read some of this. So the garter toss and the bouquet toss. In the past, wedding guests used to rip off a piece of a bride's gown as a token of good luck. Do you know this? That's so weird. Eventually, the strange ritual transformed. Well,
I'm going to stop you there because in the past, like the deep, deep past, events like that, and still in some parts of the world, really truly were community gatherings, right? And it was about the community. And I always think about this as a grief therapist and through the lens of like, what are some other ceremonial productions that we have? Well, death, right? Like funerals. And so that is not surprising. I didn't know that, but that makes sense that there would be this way for the community to be part of it. And for there to be some good luck and good fortune that comes of this union.
So what the article goes on to say is that eventually this transformed into modern garter toss and bouquet toss. Although these traditions may seem harmless, most women probably aren't keen about jumping around in their high heels to catch the bouquet, just as most men aren't enthusiastically diving under the floor to retrieve the garter. If you do decide to have a garter bouquet toss, emphasize the silliness of the tradition with fun, upbeat music. And it says, above all else, don't let your DJ embarrass your unwed guest by highlighting the fact that they're single in front of everyone else. And
oh, I didn't even think about that. We got married when we were like 12. So all of our friends were really young. Not, we weren't really 12.
We got married young, and we were the first ones married in our.
So like circle. All of our friends were single, right? But I didn't think about that, right? Like if you're getting married a little bit later, what if you've got like three friends that are single? Yeah, that might feel really icky for them. Like I haven't even, because I haven't planned a wedding in forever, haven't even thought about like these traditions. Although we didn't do a bouquet toss either. We gave my bouquet away to the couple that had been married the longest.
What about, so now I'm moving on to wayfaringweddings.com, this article. I don't know if you want to try to drop this one in there, Jenny. One of the first ones that popped out to me was taking the groom's last name. This article, I don't know who wrote this, so I'll have to shout out the author. I'm having trouble with word tonight. When I was dating my long-term now ex-boyfriend in college, there was a moment when he expressed that it was important to him that his future wife would take his name when he married. I remember being crestfallen, confronted for the first time by the idea of someday maybe having to change my name, which I guess I'd never thought about before, and then feeling very, very uncomfortable with it, but not knowing why. And the author says that they later broke up. So, you know, and we just did it because, I don't know, we just did it. And now, you know, your name is your name, and I couldn't think of you being named anything else than not having my last name. And, you know, you have the same last name as our boys. And so for us, I think it works, and it's special. It could be totally.
It could be like the biggest regret of my
assumption.
Life.
I know. But it goes back to the whole notion of like, oh, now I own you. Right?
Right. Like, right.
I don't know. It's just weird. It's just a weird notion. Like, and there's no rhyme or reason, obviously, but this is one of those traditions that seems to be outdated. You know, keep your name or take the name of your wife, or, you know, if it's the same sex marriage, or whatever.
Banana hammock or yes, something, right?
Crap bag. Mm-hmm. Mike. Mm-hmm. No, not Mike crap bag, just crap bag. Mm-hmm. First name crap, last name bag.
None of this makes sense if you're not Fred.
If you're not a Friends fan. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think the taking the groom's last name, definitely outdated, I feel like. What do you think?
Yes, and actually Deborah in our comments says, I can tell you now by proof found in my job, it's getting more and more common to not take his name. And I also see that more and more in my work as a therapist. You know, folks have to fill out paperwork when they come, and insurance info and all that stuff. And there are a lot of women that are deliberately choosing to not take their partner's name. So that is changing. And it's interesting to think about, would I have done it differently if we were to get married now? Would I have done it differently? I mean, I'm a different person now. I wasn't a social worker then. I'm a social worker now. I think I would have given pause to it. And I don't know that we even really talked about it that much. Maybe just a little bit.
No, I think we just assumed.
Well, and I think, you know, sort of get at the deeper root, I think that people can sometimes be afraid to question the traditions, not necessarily like, where did this come from? But like, do I want to do this? Does this work for me, for us as a couple, for us as a family, for whatever? And we're not just talking about weddings. People are afraid to do that because it feels, I think, for some people, like an insult to the previous generations. When you say, sure, I'm not going to take my husband's name, or, you know, I'm going to nurse or not formula feed, or I'm going to formula feed and not nurse, or I'm not going to have turkey on Christmas or something, that it can feel, or I'm not going to spank my children. It can feel like you are saying to the previous generation, I'm not doing those things because you were wrong to have done it that way. And I'm judging you poorly for your decisions.
Yeah.
Does that maybe happen? Sure, sometimes, but I think on the whole, it's just a completely separate, it's a different world that we're living in now, and folks are making different decisions, but there's not necessarily that freedom for people to do that.
But as we will learn when we shift gears and talk about child rearing, things done 30, 40, 50 years ago were kind of wrong. Like, they've proven to be wrong, right? So sometimes it's like, it's not just a choice. It's, this was a wrong decision. Mm-hmm. But even if you, the article goes on to talk about.
Well, not wrong at the time. Now, that time has passed, and things like evidence-based research has happened, and we've been able to collect data and see long-term impacts.
But
now we know more now than we did then. So not that what people did then was wrong and they knew it was wrong, but that
exactly, of course,
it's really a different world. We're working with different constraints and different information and different resources now.
No one's saying you made a wrong decision 40 years ago. You made the only decision that you were aware of. Right.
Right.
But anyway, going back to taking the husband's name, it talks about the whole notion of again, being this, being that the woman was the husband's property, and now your former name is your maiden name. Even that term maiden is like something that's like negative, or like when you were a maiden, this was your name, right? So it's like this sort of negative connotation. And now your maiden identity is not as good, so to speak, as now being part of your husband's identity or husband's property. I don't know. So a lot to think about.
Yeah, interesting.
Okay. Yeah, so the article, this is a good one. Lots of good information here, but it talks about the wording in traditional ceremonies. So the language you use to conceptualize things in life is important. The words that we use tell us subconsciously how we feel about situations as a culture. When we ask our dad to, quote, give us away at the end of the aisle, this brings about an image of being gifted from one man to another. And we talked just a little bit. And then I thought this was interesting. Stuff we don't even think about, right, until we actually have it in front of us. What happens at the end of most traditional ceremonies, Jenny? What does the officiant say?
Are we talking about weddings?
Yeah.
You may now kiss the bride.
Yes. Why isn't it you? Hey, bride, you can kiss the groom now.
Right. You can kiss each other. Like right.
Yeah, like you're giving now you own her, so go ahead and give her a kiss. You know? It's still so centered around like the groom is more important. And the bride is property, giving away. You may kiss the bride. It's something, the article says it's something so small, but it does tell us a lot about our values, or at least what the values used to be when weddings started to come together. Right. Mm. What else?
Interesting. So I was just thinking sort of the juxtaposition of that is that I guess traditionally, and this was not true for you and I, but traditionally we see when we're talking about heterosexual couples, the bride kind of being a bridezilla and the groom not really caring about anything, right? Like, is that somehow, did that somehow morph over time into like, well, this is the only way that the woman can kind of make something of it about her and take back some power? This is a real sort of rhetorical question. I don't know. I would actually have to read some of the articles you found, but I haven't read any of them.
That's okay. So I'll go back a little bit to what we talked about a few moments ago about the garter and bouquet toss, because this article makes an interesting point. You have the popular tradition of the bride throwing the bouquet into the crowd of single female guests, and the one who catches it is said to be the next one that gets married. The equivalent to this is the groom throwing the bride's garter, right?
Ooh, I forgot about this part.
Yeah. So, which he first retrieves from underneath her wedding dress and then throws the garter into the crowd of single men. The problem here is that the two activities aren't equal. The woman doesn't throw the groom's underwear into a crowd of women, right? She doesn't take off his underwear in front of his grandmother. That's what the article says.
But then traditionally, or at least like commonplace traditionally, it wouldn't have been crazy for us to have done this at our wedding. Then the person that catches the bouquet and the person that catches the garter then move to the middle of the dance floor, and presumably maybe a strange man then puts the garter on this strange woman.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's very kind of violating. I didn't even think about that. Like you, yeah.
And then you've got this. So let's move on to sort of some traditional sort of patriarchy that's still present in the whole act of getting married, where you have the bride's family traditionally paying for the wedding. I mean, this goes back to like a dowry. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. If anybody watches, what's that show called? The Netflix. Bridgerton. Bridgerton. Yeah. Talks. I mean, it's all about matches and not even about love or whatever, but it's about does the bride's family love. Well, no, you know what I mean. But this act, right? the act of matching up.
Right.
It's about, does the bride's family have enough money to make the match worthy or good? It's a good match if the bride's family has money. That's the point of a lot of that show. And so I think the bride's family paying for the wedding goes back to that. Like, what's the price of the bride? The price of the bride is the family paying for the wedding, right? But then the article goes on to talk about the patriarchy negatively affects men as well because of the requirement to spend 3 months' salary on an engagement ring. You know, this whole diamond, buying of a diamond, and, you know, why is it the job of the men, so to speak, in that relationship to, you know, it's the whole act of getting married starts with that purchase. And so, you know, why can't two people, why can't the female or woman and propose, or why can't they just mutually agree, let's get married and we can both buy each other jewelry to symbolize it. You know what? Yeah. There's so much tradition and we think, you know, why is this what we want? Is this what we really want? Or are we just following the norms?
Yeah.
Right.
Lots of interesting conversation going on in the chats.
Share it with me. I can't see it.
Oh, you can't see it?
No.
Oh, I wonder if there's a way to make you see it. Moderation. I wonder if I can share it with you. Well, I definitely can't figure that out while I'm
don't worry about it. But
I can't. Yeah, I cannot do two things at once. So it's hard for me to talk and read at the same time. But folks are talking about lots of things. So let me just highlight ones. Melissa, so if you're listening to this on the playback, you can go to my Facebook page, Changing Perspectives with Jenny Brennan, find the live broadcast from this, and then you can see all the comments under this. So that'll stay there. I encourage you. It's interesting. So Melissa said, where did it go? The recent weddings that Melissa has been to, they said, you may now kiss each other. Yay.
Oh, nice. Okay, good.
And then Chili said, we'll have to think about that wording when you officiate, with a little winky face. directed at you. Deborah said it's kind of like a branding, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
It does feel that way, right?
Yeah.
And Melissa said, we regret ever buying rings and participating in the expensive ring tradition. We haven't worn our rings in over a decade. You know what's interesting, Melissa, is that, and also Josh, I have been noticing lately, all right, let me back up. I, like a lot of people, gained weight during the pandemic. And so my rings stopped fitting. My rings fit now. However, I don't really like wearing them. They're pretty and they're beautiful, but I really only like wearing my wedding band, my plain gold wedding, like simple, there's no diamonds on it. I really only like wearing that one because there's something that feels for me weird about, I don't know. It's just weird. I haven't really leaned into like why I feel that way. I haven't really spent time thinking about it. I haven't talked to you. I'm just like, I'm just going to wear my wedding band and I'm not putting on the ring. So it's, I wonder if it's some of this stuff that's kind of,
yeah, it could be
under the surface there for me. So certainly. I'll have to think about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And anything else from the chat you want to tell me about?
There's lots of conversation.
That's great.
Another weird one is the bride going around and collecting money in a bag, or in some cultures, kissing everyone. Ooh. Definitely not for me. Yeah, we did the receiving line.
Yeah. Which is also weird.
Well, we did that.
I would assume it's traditionally supposed to be where you get your stuff, right? You receive the gifts or whatever.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Why you even call it receiving line?
Or maybe you're receiving the bride into the community and the family. I don't really know. Maybe. I'm sure it's in one of the articles that you sent. But we did that, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, as sort of a compromise, because we didn't want to go around to all of the tables during the reception and talk to everybody, because we were like, no, we're going to have fun. We're not that it wouldn't be fun to say hi to everybody, but we were getting married and we wanted to party and celebrate and dance. And we also, you and I did not drink. We were sober at our wedding. Even we did do a champagne toast because we wanted to be fully present.
Yeah.
So the receiving line was a compromise, I think, to make, some of the more like older traditional guests happy, and not appear rude. And I think that that's what happens with a lot of this, right? Weddings, child rearing, parenting, all of that is, well, we don't want to upset the other people. We don't want to upset the great grandparents or the great aunts.
People have to stop making decisions because of that, though. In my humble opinion.
I will tell you, as a therapist, we spend a lot of time in therapy sessions about that. And not coming from me, but this is that is probably one of the three biggest sources, and I have no actual scientific data to back this up, but I bet it's out there. One of the three biggest pressures on a couple is their families and what their family is expecting of them, because it's always been that way, or because of traditions, or what their family is not respecting in terms of boundaries. It is a huge issue for folks out there.
Before we transition over to parenting and child rearing, I do have one more wedding tradition that's weird. Well, in my opinion, is
it
weird.
It kind of feels like all of it's weird now.
I know. The whole thing is weird.
Yeah, like the more it's like a word where the more you say it, the more you're like, that word's really weird.
Weddings are weird.
That's kind of how I feel about weddings right now.
So this is again from the wayfaringweddings.com article. And one of the biggest things on their list is bridal showers. So the author says, I've written about my issues with bridal showers before. This is a tradition that no longer serves its original purpose. Traditionally, bridal showers did not include men, and still many showers have an all-female guest list, and often the groom doesn't attend. And there is no equivalent for grooms. What this says is that the bride needs to receive gifts and get prepared for marriage, but the groom doesn't, right? So the more equal way to go about this kind of event might be the more modern iteration, often just called a wedding shower instead of a bridal shower, or a Jack and Jill or whatever. But still, this whole notion of, and a lot of the time, I keep interrupting myself, but a lot of the time, it's gone are the days of couples getting married and not living together ahead of time, right? So a lot of, like, you and I lived together before we were married.
Which is why we ultimately did not get married in a church, right? We were going to, my grandmother was very, very, very unhappy.
Well, we had a long engagement.
But we did. And then in order for us to get married in the church, we would have had to lie to the church and say we weren't living together. Right. And we both were like, we're not starting our marriage on a lie. And so we didn't.
Right. So I think, the whole notion of this, and then watching them open their gifts, and, if you want to celebrate and have a wedding shower, have those like sort of pre-wedding get together and give them, gifts that they could use in their home and stuff, that's cool. I don't know, this whole notion of a bridal shower where the men aren't included, and you just sit there and watch them open gifts. I don't know. It seems like work to me.
Wow. This morning in a 30-second conversation when I was driving to the gym and you were at work, and I was like, what if we talk about like questioning norms? I was not thinking of any of this, and now I am really in my head about weddings. So many thoughts are going on, and there's chats going on. All right, so in no particular order, you said about the wedding shower and how there's nothing sort of equivalency for the guys, but there is this thing that we didn't know about that happens in like Connecticut and some other areas of the country, a stag party. I think that's what it's called, but it's different than
the bachelor party. But it's also kind of weird. Yeah.
But like you don't invite, and I apologize if there's anyone who is from stag party land, if I'm maybe misremembering some of the details, but having known some people that have gone to them, if I'm remembering correctly, it's for a larger group of people than would go to the bachelor party. So it's not for the groom's like closest friends. It's for like anybody that kind of maybe knows the groom. And it's about like giving him money. And I don't really know the origins of that. So that's interesting. Yeah. But Melissa in the chat said, conversely-ish, grooms had the bachelor party because marriage was daunting. And even thinking about like the bachelor, bachelorette party, and I want to acknowledge we're being very heteronormative in this conversation.
Yes, yes,
we are very much talking about heterosexual couples. And actually, to sidetrack, I think probably what has allowed folks to start to question some of the norms, the norms is same-sex couples being able to marry and partake in this and being like, hey, these are not practices that we want to embrace, so let's do something different, and kind of giving permission for other people to be like, oh, we can do that. We don't have to do the traditional thing. Great. I don't want to do that either. The whole concept of like the wedding shower, what are the things that you're supposed to register for? Supposed to register?
Like, yeah, exactly.
China patterns and...
What's that for, though?
Stand mixers? I mean, theoretically, it's for the woman to be a good homemaker,
to be
right?
A homemaker, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, one of the articles I read talked a lot about how you should do, or you could consider different registries, like a vacation registry or, a big purchase, or we're going to put a pool in. So this is, if you want to help us put a pool in or something like that, instead of this.
Help pay for our honeymoon, right?
There's
a lot. I think it's really easy in life to, in all things, not just weddings or babies or.
And
or,
listen, go ahead. I'm sorry. And finish your thought, then I'm going to tell my joke.
I lost my thought.
I'm so sorry.
To just sort of move forward and just do
derailed.
Things. That's how it's always been done, right? Like, oh, and then we're going to do a bachelorette party and you do a bachelor party and oh, a shower. And do we want guys there and girls? Like, and just. Move forward and do it because life is so stressful and hectic and you don't have time to sort of stop and think about things, but maybe it could be helpful to stop and think about things. And if we're talking about things that involve a couple, it can be really important for your relationship to maybe sit down for 30 minutes and be like, hey, let's listen to this episode and see like how we really feel about some of these wedding traditions or child rearing traditions or stuff like that.
You ready for my joke now?
I mean, you just built it up, so it better be really good.
If I had to redo this 20 years ago, I definitely would have registered at Guitar Center.
We should have. Can we see all of the, so I mentioned at the beginning of this episode that I've been nesting because tomorrow starts football season, which means, for 5 to 6 days a week, Josh and our youngest will be at football on a field and then games and all of that. And so I feel like a new mom who's about to give birth and I just need everything settled, like it's going to be crazy. And so I need the house to be as organized and as tidy as possible so it can withstand the tornado football. Of life that's going to happen. And then school too. School goes back. We go back a little bit later here in the Northeast than all my Southern and friends. Anyways, one of the first rooms I did this week was the living room, which I finally just gave into and was like, all right, I guess the living room is basically a Guitar Center. So let's pull out some furniture and make rooms for guitar stands. So I think you can only see one of them behind
there's
you.
There's a bass.
But there's actually two. The there's corner. A bass, there's an acoustic.
Can you see the acoustic? I don't know.
Not really. Your mic's blocking it. There's a cajon.
Ukulele.
Drum.
There's a ukulele over here. There's a cajon right there. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff.
There's an amp in there. I just built it in.
Oh, there's a saxophone and a trombone over there.
There's both.
It's like a music store.
Yeah. It is like a, I leaned into it.
Anyway, so again, I recommend wayfaringweddings.com. This article is really good. But you alluded to it, but it does talk about bachelor and bachelorette parties. Like,
hobbies?
You know, I know, I told you, I'm having trouble with words. the sentiment of, oh, this is your last night of freedom. You know, what is that? And then,
it to be like really kind of normal for there to be like strippers and hookers, prostitutes at bachelor parties, right? Because he's going to be tied down after that and marriage is going to be so hard. So again, generalization here, but that is sort of like the like haha, elbow, like chuckle about what happens historically at bachelor parties. I do think that it's moved. And I will say in my work, working with a lot of like younger folks who are like in their mid-20s that are getting married and having friends that are getting married. Now, this tradition, which I actually in many cases I don't think is a great tradition, is that now there are bachelor and bachelorette weekends. And so it's not a party. There's like the guys go away, the girls go away. And then in some cases they go away to the same place and they have overlap there. So it's sort of moved away from like those one last wild night. And instead it's kind of being with your friends. I will say it places a huge financial burden on the that generation. Well, not just the wedding party, but their friends. Cause we're talking about weekends where you're getting on a plane and you're renting a house and you're renting limos and you're renting boats. And if you've got three or four friends getting married in a year and you've also got the weddings, like this is another source of stress for a lot of folks. So I don't necessarily think it's a great financial trend for folks, but it does feel a little more inclusive of like the coupleship and not like the groom giving up his freedom.
And then the last point I want to make before we shift gears, I just want to share the point that the article made about gender divided wedding parties. You know, why is it, you know, if you're female, you're
why do my closest friends have to be women?
Right. They don't. But you know, they also don't have to be, you know, if we got married and one of your best friends was a male, they don't have to be a groomsman. They could be on your side. Right. Like there shouldn't be any rules about this.
Well, and there aren't any, right? Like your wedding certificate is not going to be valid or invalid based on whether or not you do a garter toss or a bouquet toss. You get married in a church.
Honey, we're not really married because I didn't smash cake in your face.
And so, and it's also, listen, could there be some big fallout if like great Aunt Josephine gets mad that you're not doing a garter toss or that you're not doing like a full Catholic ceremony? Sure, there absolutely could be big family fallout.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what?
Exactly. So what?
So what?
All right. Do you want to switch to child rearing and parenting? Do we have enough time?
Yeah. Well, we're already at 47, so we can tease it, and then maybe we have to revisit this topic. I was thinking not specifically about child rearing, but about child birthing. And I don't.
You know, you literally wrote child rearing in your text to me this morning. Mm. Those quote unquote.
Did I text you or did I talk to you?
You did a talk to text, I think.
Well, my Siri cannot be trusted if we've learned anything. Yeah. Okay, what was I going to say? I lost it.
I don't know.
I've got lots and lots of clients over the past couple of years who have had babies and gone through having a baby. And I'm not talking about like actual childbirthing or any of that. I'm talking about like the period after which a baby is born. Because COVID forced things to change. And I would argue as a therapist and someone that works pretty strongly and heavily in maternal mental health, it was a blessing for a lot of moms and dads and babies. Does that mean it wasn't hard? No, I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is it forced new parents to not have to share their baby with the entire extended family for the entire time they're in the hospital. In fact, they couldn't. It was only mom, baby, and a support person who may or may not have been the baby's biological father. That was it. And that alleviated so much stress for so many people, both personally and professionally that I know, and was great for that family unit because it allowed them to bond and for the women who gave childbirth to heal or to try to start healing from the birthing process. It allowed for that to happen without having to worry about anyone else's feelings. And I get that that sounds selfish, but again, so what? Like at the end of the day, that baby is your responsibility as the mom. And if there's another partner involved as that partner too, those first days are crucial. And again, I'm sorry if anyone has a great Aunt Josephine. I don't think you do. And that's probably why I'm centering on that. And that was the street we lived on when we first had our first apartment. Not great Aunt Josephine, but just Josephine Street. If great Aunt Josephine gets really mad that she has to wait a week to meet the baby and she's not going to talk to you about that, I don't know if that's such a loss for you.
Whatever.
I know that's pretty harsh, but that's a hill I'll die on.
You don't owe anybody anything. It doesn't matter if they're...
You do owe them respect, but respect doesn't mean that you light yourself on fire to keep them warm.
No.
That's not respect. Bending over backwards, making yourself uncomfortable, sacrificing your bonding time with your baby. That's not respect.
No.
That's allowing someone to be disrespectful of your time.
So we're going to lean into it and lean into the fact that you really want to talk about post-birth baby stuff,
which is
fine. I have articles and we can talk. Maybe we do a second part two on actual like child rearing. And because I have a few articles about
eating stuff vegetables you shouldn't do anymore. And stuff
right.
like that.
Mm-hmm. Like fit, you can't get up until you finish everything on your plate. No, that's not good. But you should get up when you're full.
You just alienated a whole lot of people.
I don't care. anyway, so I have this article from scarymommy.com, a great website. This is 20 pieces of outdated baby advice. So we don't have time to go through all 20. I'm going to try to highlight a couple of these and let you comment. And again, if you want to drop this in the chat, Jenny, I gave it to you in the email. So number two on this is holding a baby too much will spoil them. So many people think tiny babies are capable of emotionally manipulating adults with their need for affection. Lots of us have heard that crying makes a baby's lungs stronger. Picking up a baby when it cries will spoil them. And crying it out is the only way to get a baby to sleep. None of that is true, like at all, says scarymommy.com. Yeah, of course, right, Jenny? Like you.
There must actually be a person that wrote that article as someone that has been published on Scary Mommy. I will look it up. Sorry.
Okay.
That was my author coming out. I'll find
it. Do you want to comment on what I just said?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think we might. Katie Cloyd is who wrote this.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, no, and the research shows you can't spoil a baby. I think my answer for all of this is just going to be, yeah, no, research has proven that that's not good. We're not going to fight about it. Like, we're just going to go read some studies and see.
Is my point earlier when I said, you know, some of this stuff is scientifically proven. It's research says that you shouldn't do this anymore because of XYZ.
Right.
It's not that, you know. I have no ill will or I don't have an opinions. This is what you should not do anymore.
But I will say that term baby is a pretty broad term, right? So if we're talking about like a 2-year-old or but if we're talking about like newborns who do not have the capacity to emotionally self-regulate, then you're not going to spoil them. Should you put them on the flip side, is it okay to put them down? Again, maternal mental health perspective here. If you're losing it as like a mom, you've got postpartum and there's nobody around, it's okay to put that baby down somewhere safe and walk away. I don't mean leave the house. I don't mean like abandon that baby, but if you need to go into the bathroom for 2 minutes and like cry and call someone to come help you, you can put that baby down.
Yeah.
So just sort of the flip side of like,
yeah.
You can spoil a baby.
But you don't, you can't, yeah, this, you can, it's okay to pick up the baby and snuggle it. Sleep when the baby sleeps. This is number three in the Scary Mommy article. The whole sleep when the baby sleeps saying would fill me with rage whenever someone would say it. My son was practically allergic to sleep for the first year of his life. I was so tired. And the article goes on to say, of course, you can catch some Z's while your baby sleeps. Have at it. It's just that many of us have a lot of other things to do. A messy house. This person works from home. They have two other kids. How exactly are they supposed to sleep on the infant schedule? It's such a, quote, let them eat cake piece of advice. What do you think about that, Jenny? Sleep when the baby sleeps. Is that outdated?
I think that sleep is more important than we give new moms credit for and other partners that are caring for the baby too. Because sleep deprivation can lead to some pretty significant mental health impacts for the mom. And so it is really important for a mom to sleep. But there is something kind of minimizing when you say to a mom, like, oh, just sleep when the baby sleeps. Well, what if, but But when is she supposed to shower? Or when is she supposed to be able to like call a friend? Or when is she supposed to be able to like sit outside by herself without a baby tied to her? Or when is she supposed to be able to like read a book or sit on her closet floor and cry? Like, when is she supposed to be doing those other things? Because when you say sleep when the baby sleeps, and then that's basically your whole life then, right? That sort of reduces the new mom to nothing more than a mom.
I'm going to start sleeping. I'm going to start sleeping when Lola sleeps.
Oh, then you're sleeping all the live long day.
20 hours a day. Why not? All right. This next point says, again, this is the Scary Mommy article, 20 pieces of outdated baby advice.
No, this is the
Katie Cloud.
Mm-hmm. Cloyd.
Cloyd. You sure it's not Cloud?
I don't know. It's C-L-O-Y-D.
Yeah. Katie, if you're listening, let us know. Breastfeeding after a few... Oh, sorry. Stop breastfeeding at some random pre-appointed time. Which they're saying that this is outdated advice. Breastfeeding after a few months old is controversial among old school crowd. If someone's aunt told her that breastfeeding was no longer beneficial once a baby has teeth, this other person said, so it looks like Katie got some... She did some research and asked some folks some of their thoughts on some of these. So she's quoting people's names in here. Someone else said their relative said nursing past a year was child abuse. That's interesting. So yeah, it's there's no predetermined stop time, right, Jenny?
I guess I could do a whole episode on just this one. We might not get through this whole list of 20.
No, we're not. I think we have time for probably one or two more, right? Okay. We're up in an hour now, probably.
I think it goes both ways. I think that, and it's been interesting because it kind of feels like the pendulum has swung and continues swinging between like, you should only breastfeed your child to like, no, don't even bother, just formula feed. And to that I say, do what you want, right?
Yeah, as
like the mom, if you want to breastfeed, great, go for it. If you decide after 2 hours or 22 months that it doesn't work for you, great, stop. If you want a formula feed and not try breastfeeding, great, go for it. There, like, fed is best, right? But I do see it interesting, like the medical community, I've seen them push both ways. I've seen them push new moms to breastfeed and push new moms to not breastfeed in a really short period of time. But the main thing here is that new moms are being pressured. To do something and feel like they don't have a voice. And so I've sat with so many women who are like a mess and crying, and they're like, I just, breastfeeding is terrible and it's awful. And as someone that nursed both our children for quite a lengthy period of time, but it was hard, it's okay to stop. Like, it's okay if you said, I'm going to do this for 3 months, and then after 3 days, you're just a wreck. Stop. And that's okay. But there's this like notion of failure tied to it. Either way, it's a really interesting kind of aspect of motherhood right now, where there's like pressure from both sides and judgment from both sides, and the fact that there are both sides is weird to me. So I don't know, I feel like I just talked in circles there. I have feelings. Pressured and shame. Deborah said shame. There's so much shame around it.
Both
ways. Like if you nurse, if you don't nurse, if you nurse and then stop, like if you pump and don't nurse, it's all, there's just, just stay out of it. Great aunt.
There's a lot. There's a lot of
mind your business.
Like,
focus on yourself.
Yes. And that's not just about breastfeeding, but I think just in general about taking care of a new baby. If you have got, I've heard stories of, new moms bumping into like older women in grocery stores giving their advice,
giving them advice, but touching them, like pregnant women.
Touch.
I guess this goes back to sort of the brides being property, right? There's something really interesting that happens in society, and not interesting in a good way, but when a woman becomes visibly pregnant, it's as if suddenly her body is no longer hers, and people get to touch her without her consent and talk about how her body looks without her consent and talk about the weight she's gaining and talk about then when the baby's born, then just randomly strange old lady in the Target store touching your baby and you don't know her. Like, somehow this has become societally okay to do. And it's, it's not. It's really like, let's have boundaries.
Right. Right. Do we have time for one more?
One more. Pick a
one
good
more.
One
more. I've got a good one. Okay. this is number 13 on Katie Cloud's scary mommy article.
Or Katie Cloyd.
Birthmarks have a logical explanation.
Oh, this is interesting. For those of you that are not watching and have never seen Josh, Josh has some birthmarks. He has birthmarks on his face.
A fair amount. I'm birthmarked.
I also have birthmarks.
Am I sharing the right side? Is that, they're all here, right?
Yes, it also, is it on your right side? I've been married to you for like a bazillion years. What side are your, they're on your right side.
On my right side, yeah. And I've got one here under my beard. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so this person's mother-in-law told her that her baby would be born with a birthmark because she was frightened really badly by a snake during pregnancy. This reminded me that I used to have a friend who believed the same thing. According to my super scientific Google search, this kind of superstition surrounding birthmarks is pretty common. And Katie included a link there to what I assume is an article about that. And it presents
in different ways. It'd be funny if it was like a recipe to like a chocolate peanut butter bundt cake or something.
Oh, yeah, that would be funny. It's pretty common and presents in different ways all around the world. Lots of people think birthmarks are the result of trauma during pregnancy. And that's just not the case at all. But again, I think that there's lots of crazy advice out there. And, you know, there's a couple articles that Jenny shared in the chat. And I think that we've just sort of just really touched the surface on this, the second half of this breaking traditions with regards to parenting and giving birth and having babies. So I think most of this episode was all about the wedding stuff, which was super interesting and weird. Weddings are weird. But now I think we definitely do a part two and do more of this parenting baby stuff. What do you think?
So, yeah, 100%. I also am going to go off on a weird tangent, but is connected. So
are? No way. I know. Never do that.
So you're talking about sort of the old wives' tales, right? And kind of superstition. Like if you get scared during your pregnancy, your baby's going to have a birthmark. That stuff, there's certainly, you know, parts of the world where superstition and like witchcraft and that belief is really like a cultural tradition for them. But it also is here for us in America. Like if we look back to like the 1800s, so many of the traditions that we follow in life period come from this period of time where we really had this kind of weird fascination and fear of death. And so that's where a lot of the like covering mirrors after a funeral, we became very, we can talk about sort of our changing attitudes towards death and interactions with death over time, like globally as sort of a global society. Yeah. But in like 1800s, it was very much this like kind of romanticized image of death. Like we were very, very much interested in it, but also very afraid of it. We would do death masks, then also cover the mirrors because we were afraid of like the ghost coming
back.
It's
very interesting.
But so a lot of old wives' tales grew from that and then get passed down from generation to generation to generation to generation and somehow give people comfort. So it's really interesting. We could do a whole episode on that.
We did a death mask episode, right?
We did. Mm-hmm. Long time ago.
Check that one out, people.
User beware. But the audio was probably pretty bad.
No, I think that was good. Okay. It wasn't that long ago. Yeah.
Oh, it feels like it was in the beginning.
The content is still good. Probably a year and a half ago.
Well,
so.
We went over by 3.5 minutes.
Oh my goodness!
Under an hour. I'm gonna turn into
I'll just cut that last rant you had out. Okay. All right. So, breaking traditions. It's okay to do that.
Because
it's 2022 and you're your own person.
I guess, so I would leave you with this. Ask yourself when you're kind of confronted with a tradition and you find yourself just sort of falling down that path of like, oh, I'm going to do this because we've always done this. Ask yourself why.
Why?
Why do we always do this? Why do I want to continue doing this? Or why do I not want to? And what's the worst that can happen? And if the worst that can happen is Great Aunt Josephine is going to have her feelings hurt and she's not going to talk to you for 2 weeks, maybe that's okay.
That's okay.
I think it's at least worth thinking about those scary things and trying to find sort of your power and your voice and be a little more deliberate about the choices that you make in life.
Well said, Jenny.
Okay. Listen,
is that it?
If you disagree, please be kind, because the trolls came for me today on my page, and it was not fun.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, the bigger you get, the more trolls you attract.
It is true. It is true. I was like, oh yeah, a big.
Oh, speaking of social media, check out Jenny's reels on Facebook, Changing Perspectives on Facebook. But you also check out Dizzy Bird Studio. That's me, Dizzy Bird Lounge, on TikTok. I have starting to try to get more activity on TikTok. I do. I will be doing some craft cocktail stuff, but also some music stuff. So Dizzy Bird Lounge on TikTok. You can see a video of me playing live a couple weeks ago with my good friend Mitch. Right, Jenny? Mm-hmm.
That is true. I was there.
All right. Yes.
Okay. Were. Okay. Well, thank you for those.
Is that it?
That's it. Thank you for those of you that were with us tonight on the live. And if you're listening on the podcast recording, or you're watching on the replay, definitely continue the conversation in the chat box over here on the Facebook page, Changing Perspectives with Jenny Brennan, because it's a super interesting conversation. So I am here for it. We can continue this conversation all week long.
Yes, I love it.
Okay.
All right, you ready to say goodbye?
I am.
All right, say bye, Jenny.
Bye, Jenny.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.